Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Sounds Good Radio. I'm your host, Shriver.
And I am Big Neek.
Big Neek, thank you so much for coming back, joining us on this episode. We hope that you caught episode one. If you didn't, be sure to check out our socials at Sounds Good Radio on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, all of the above. There's a link tree in every bio. You can find us and leave us a comment. Let us know where you're listening, where you're watching, and we are so happy to have you.
Yes. Welcome back for our second episode of the Hum Sounds Good podcast. It is now February. We are in a new month, and it is Black History Month. And so, you know, it's also my birthday month. So it is a very special month to me. So I'm just excited to talk about all the things that we have planned for you all today.
Yes, absolutely. So to start, we're going to do a little Grammys recap since it's fresh on the brain. And we're going to just talk about some of the things we like, some of the things we didn't like. And then we're going to delve into a little bit of a history lesson.
Yes.
So who was your favorite new artist that you saw?
So I haven't watched the Grammys in a while. So when we sat down and watched it so we could recap, was my first time in a long time. I didn't really know a lot of the people performing, but who stood out to me was that
Sabrina Carpenter.
She was cute, little vibe. Yes. Like she wasn't trying to. I just like when pop music was pop music, give you lights, camera, action.
Yes,
just, I lived for it. I was like, okay.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent of like the late 90s, early 2000s pop music. She does it just right. The stage present, the stage sets.
Very well done. Whoever her team is.
Yeah.
She.
The makeup, even her red carpet look. Yes. It tied into her showcase. Yes. Like, and so I really, really liked that. Also, another one on the radar is Chapel Roan. She's all the buzz right now. Pink Pony Club. She had a debut performance, which is huge as a young artist, and everybody loved it. So, I loved her red carpet, her outfits, her makeup. It was very camp, very like, I hope she's going to the Met Gala this year, and I would love to see what her team does, because she gives very much.
Know who she was. I knew her name, but I didn't know exactly what she did or anything, but, you know. Seeing her on the show, beautiful gowns. And, you know,
beautiful gowns. That's all we know for now. Yeah.
Go ahead, Ms. Chapel.
Who did you like vocally the most out of all their performers?
The Grammys is a fever dream for me.
Right.
But the girl with the little bob, she's on the ballot.
Ray.
Yes.
And she also ties into kind of what we're talking about today. If you didn't know, Ray has been on the scene for a very long time. She has been a notable songwriter for Beyonce, who we're about to touch on next. But the vocals, the stage presence,
she sang her throat down.
Yes. Yeah.
She can sing much.
Loved that.
But I feel like this, these last couple of years have been the year for the producer crossover to singer vibe that we've got going on, especially with the Victoria Monet. Like the writers and the producers are definitely getting into their bag and being in front of the camera, and the girls are doing their thing. I am impressed.
Money Long, too,
yes,
right?
Money the pen, yes.
Yeah, because she's been a songwriter behind the scenes for years, and now we actually got to see her perform live. She opened for Chris Brown, and it was, sounds just like the track, beautifully done. It was, it was
definitely
a lot of fun.
Not a studio artist.
Yeah. And then least favorite, and we both agreed on this, I think.
I did not like the Quincy Jones tribute, like, at all. I was not moved. In any way, shape, or form, I feel like they could have did something else. What it could have been, I have absolutely no idea. They don't pay me the book for creative directing. but it just kind of fell flat. I mean, I'm glad they gave him, you know, his flowers, but
the whole thing just kind of felt awkward.
Yeah, I
don't know. Placed. For someone that has such a large presence in the music industry and has done so much for so many artists.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like, it was just a little.
When I saw Will Smith come out, I was like, "Okay, we're gonna get the Fresh Prince of Bel Air." Like, okay, and Will Smith? No, he just talked and talked and talked. Bye, Will. Anyways, so and then who opened it? Why can't we remember who opened it?
I don't remember.
It was somebody.
Was it Stevie that opened? No. Oh.
Cynthia Erivo opened it up. Beautiful voice, vocals to the gods.
Yes.
And then next was
Stevie, I think.
Stevie and Herbie Hancock, bless them. Herbie was just playing away. I don't know if the earpieces wasn't synced up or what. Stevie and his harmonica, which I appreciated because Stevie got his start playing the harmonica, and it was just really wonderful just to see the nostalgia of it all. Because at the end of the day, Quincy was a musician. He was more than just a producer. He could play a plethora of instruments. The keyboard was his instrument of choice. So I think that was a nice nod to him. That's all I got. Oh, the one I did like, I liked the country music girl. I lived for her. Lainey Wilson.
Oh, yeah. Big buddy. Yeah, she was cute. But I'm going to be honest. Like, I don't know. I guess I feel like the songs, they could have used more recognizable songs.
Yes, yes.
Because as me, someone who doesn't know as much of what all his body of work is, none of it was like, I don't know.
And then when we were trying to get the notable songs, we had the Thriller tribute by Janelle Monáe. We love Janelle Monáe, but I'm tired. Y'all can't get nobody else to do it. Anybody else could do a Michael Jackson tribute besides her?
We know who could have, but yeah.
But, you know, I don't know about Stan, but good for her. That was cute.
Absolutely. And then lastly, Kendrick and his sweep of the Grammys with 5 total Grammys.
5
total. Yes.
Congratulations, Kendrick.
He got 5 Grammys in one night for one song. And that song was a diss track.
Yes.
If that isn't history making, I don't know what is.
I mean, Drake did the same thing when he did Back to Back, which was his diss on Meek Mill.
Ooh.
So I feel like when we get into the Not Like Us discourse, I feel like it was a good song. It's a catchy song. It's on the radio. Like, I'm ready to squabble up. Hey, like, I'm here for it. But Drake crying about the whole situation, I feel like it's overdone, because I feel like when Drake was beefing with Meek Mill and he had Back to Back was everywhere. It was on the commercials. It was on the TV. And it was all fun and games. It was laughing and ha ha ha. But now, when Drake has quote unquote lost the beef, and Not Like Us is doing almost, if not bigger than how Back to Back did, it's not translating well for Drake. To me, you're giving sore loser.
You took the words out of my mouth.
And congrats to Kendrick. Love
right,
that.
Right. So for Not Like Us, he won Song of the Year. Okay. Best Rap Song, Best Rap Performance, Best Music Video, and Record of the Year.
Okay, I'm into that.
So with those 5 in the night, that gets Kendrick to 22 Grammys in his career, while Drake has 5.
Only 5.
So congrats to both of them for their Grammys.
Yes, because that is not a small feat.
Absolutely.
Whoever you are.
So, absolutely.
For them.
So, and also the amount of categories at the Grammys is like astronomical.
Well, they've been adding stuff to be more inclusive. So.
Which is great. So, speaking of inclusivity, I know that they did a bit talking about all the people of color that they added to their board of...
Yes, and women as well.
Yes.
Given very much DEI, but I'm going to get me started.
Right.
The Grammys are inclusive with people of color, more women on the voting Grammy board. There was the Grammy president or CEO, I didn't catch his name, that made a big speech about how things have changed and how The Weeknd boycotted them and he wanted to change some things, and now The Weeknd's here to perform. Weird, but whatever. We love the inclusion of it all. But,
right.
You know.
I think I missed when The Weeknd was boycotting, and I'm assuming it was for the lack of inclusivity.
I wasn't on that part of Twitter.
But because of all this and because of the Grammy implementing all these new avenues for mm-hmm. people of color, mm-hmm. Beyonce.
As you should.
Finally got her album of the year.
Finally.
For Cowboy Carter.
Unpopular opinion. She should have been have album of the year. And I mean, Cowboy Carter was cute, but I feel like she's put much greater work out. She has been snubbed year after year after year. But, you know, we'll take what we can get.
Absolutely.
And she was very much groundbreaking for what she did with.
And with this win, mm-hmm. her finally getting album of the year, it makes her the most awarded mm-hmm. artist in Grammy history.
Yes.
So say what you want about Cowboy Carter. Say mm-hmm. what you want about her not having a deserving mm-hmm. genre of being able to be in mm-hmm. country. Mm-hmm. The proof's in the pudding, baby. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So.
The bees are buzzing.
Right. So with all of that, mm-hmm. I feel like the Grammys definitely showcased Black excellence. Mm-hmm. And that's why today we wanted to touch on a little bit of Black excellence in the music world, mm-hmm. stemming off of Cowboy Carter and mm-hmm. the discourse that is. We're going to talk about the history of Black cowboys.
Yes.
And I'm going to hand this episode over to my beautiful co-host.
I'll take that. Anyways.
Let me get
together here. Get my notes queued up.
Yeah.
So when we were sitting down watching the Grammys, I was thinking, I was like, ooh, and Beyonce just being this whole big discourse and the talk of Beyonce and country music and what is her place in country music. And I found that mighty odd. And they were like, country music, she doesn't belong to this, and Black people and the first woman, and just this huge discourse between her being a woman of color and breaking into the country music scene, which I'm to believe is not as welcoming to people of color. And with Beyonce's album, a lot of up and coming country artists were featured on her album and subsequently won Grammys last night as well. So shout out to them. Shaboozy, Tanner Adele, Brittany. Oh, I can't remember the Brittany girl. Is that Brittany Tate? Buckle Bunny, I think. Forgive me, but shout out to all of y'all. Y'all did y'all thing. And thank you again, Beyonce, for ushering and opening doors for the new generation, because sometimes that's what you need. You need somebody to open the door for you. And in that same sense, the people that opened the door for country music in general, I believe were Black people. So getting into that, I'm thrown off because that's not what I want to say.
That's okay. Well, let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
What is a cowboy? Since there's all this discourse about whether Black people, melanated people, can be cowboys.
So when it even goes back to the basis of country music, when you think of country music, you think of cowboys and indigenous people. Anyways. So you think of them and you immediately think of John Wayne and a white man with their bandanas on their horsebacks and their sheriffs and all that. But that is not what the original cowboys were. So I want to open this segment, and it is going to be called Black Cowboys, the original cowboys, the OGs. So starting off, the just getting down to the etymology of it all is the word cowboy. The term was coined during slavery because it was a term to identify the people that were working with the cows. So in slavery, if you worked in the house, you are a house N-word. If you worked in the field, you were a field N-word. If you worked with the cows or with the livestock, you were the cow N-word. So as time progressed, the N-word was removed, and it was more so of the cow boy, house boy, field boy. But again, so that they kind of watered it down a little bit, but we're calling them boy. Grown, fully healthy, working men, we're calling them boys, which is derogatory in another sense. So when you were being called a cow N-word, so it's basically put down to your race, and then being called a cowboy is a put down to your masculinity as a man. So for me, not only was it physically difficult for him, it was mental warfare when it came down to it, because you were being degraded on a almost daily basis. So a lot of the time it was, hey boy, go and get that cow. Hey boy, go grab this. So, hey cowboy, go get those cows. And that's how you got that terminology.
So would you consider, like, the term cowboy in and of itself, that is a whitewashing, since it originated as a racial slur?
Most definitely is whitewash. A lot of people will say, well, a cowboy is a universal term, everybody can be a cowboy, and cap. I want to say cap. The white people that worked with the cows had a different name. So cowboy was originally just for the black people, and it was offensive if you were not black or brown to be called a cowboy. As a white person, your name was a ranch hand, a cattle man, and things of that nature. So there was a little bit of level of respect to it, of course, because they thought that they felt superior. So no, that's not how it worked.
You have cowboys were the backbone of the cattle industry.
So along with the naming of it all, so that was degrading. But in spite of, we were still able to rise and be able to have a stamp on the business. Cowboys were known to be the backbone of the cattle industry. Cowboys were known to be the best cattle ranchers in history. Most of the time, their job description was to go on cattle drives. And a cattle drive is basically transporting a huge herd of cattle from one location to another. At this time, the prevalence of cowboys was usually in, like, Texas.
The plains, essentially.
The plains, Arizona.
Yeah.
So we also have to think back. And in this time, the west side of the United States was uninhabited. It was uncharted land.
Is that the Mason-Dixon line?
Yes, which is up from the Mississippi.
Look at me.
A lot of that from the Mississippi over to the west was not discovered land, and only a few people ventured out and were even able to break out to see what was out there. So at that time, people were expanding. The ranchers, especially in Texas, Oklahoma, Mexico, they were expanding into the West and seeing what those uncharted lands were. And when they went to those lands, they saw that they were flat lands. They were good land for the cows. There were wild horses. There was buffalo, all that. So they wanted to explore and reap those benefits of the land that was here for us.
Mm-hmm.
And exploring that land, and especially if you were a rich rancher, you're going to take your cows to that wide open space. And in order to transport your cows from, again, Texas to Oklahoma or anywhere to anywhere west, it doesn't really even matter. You needed assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the largest herd that was being transported was up to 3,000 heads of cattle.
Jeez.
And to those 3,000 heads of cattle, there were 2 cowboys per 100 cattle. I did the math, and I think that was 30. Don't get me wrong. I think there was 30 cowboys to 100 cattle to transport them. And because the black people had worked with, the black cowboys had worked with previously on the plantation with the cows, they were more skilled. They had the hands-on work. They knew how to handle the cattle because they had to do that on the plantation.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst doing that, they also had, higher, stricter standards. So they were the best of the best. So using them to transport took a whole level of skill that a lot of people did not possess at the time. So because of that, at this time, especially, they were still enslaved.
Okay.
So they didn't have no choice.
I was going to ask you, with present day, a cowboy is generalized as a white man's job. Mm-hmm. So essentially what you're saying is, being a cowboy is rooted in slave labor.
Yes, 100%.
Whereas today, it's been whitewashed into a white man's job.
Yes, yes. So it's the erasure of our rich history, because I feel like it is more than just Black history, but it's also American history. We all know, and I believe that we've learned, and I don't know how long the kids are going to learn these type of things, but we've learned that in the United States, we ventured out. Lewis and Clark, they went past the Mississippi and they explored and discovered all these many lands and all these different terrains and the mm-hmm. Oregon Trail and the trail, all these different things. But and that's very rich history that we should be proud of, but we also need to know the backbone of it, and what really built all of this was off the backs of Black people and slaves that did the manual labor, the hard work. And I don't want to omit anyone. There were many people that worked with the cows that were ranchers, but the cowboys were African or Mexican. They came up from Mexico. They were either Black or brown.
Okay.
Those were your cowboys. Mm-hmm. Your ranch hands and your cattle hands were your white people, your European descendants.
Would that also be categorized as like an overseer? Or is there a hierarchy?
I'm not sure there's a hierarchy. I'm sure there was someone mm-hmm. that was in charge. So in this instance, you still had poor white people mm-hmm. that needed the work. Mm-hmm. They needed a job. So, yes, so the people that were getting paid, I'm sure, were of some type of supervisory position. Right. And the people that were working against their will or for just a living. So, again, the white and the brown people and the indigenous people, these were all people that were included. It was not just Black people. There were other people of color, and there were also white people that worked with the cattle and participated in these trips west.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, predominantly it was Black people, and they were the backbone of this whole situation and exploring the expansion of the West Coast.
Okay. So at what point in that history when the slaves were freed, what did that look like as far as transitioning from slavery to, I think it's indentured servitude? Mm-hmm.
Okay. So slavery lasted in the United States for about 200 years,
mm-hmm.
From 1619 to
1865. Okay.
So the Civil War, the Emancipation Proclamation, which is where Abe Lincoln freed the slaves, the Emancipation Proclamation was originally signed and issued on January 1st, 1963.
Okay.
That's when all the slaves were to be freed and to go on about the way. Basically, all right, we don't own you no more. You can go. So a lot of slaves who had been brought from their native land in Africa and put on a ship and brought over, and their family and their bloodline has washed out, and they procreated and multiplied. They don't have a home. So, yes, you are free. Yay, yay, yay. But where do I go?
Right.
What do I do? And this is where we enter into indentured servitude.
Okay.
So now you don't have anywhere to go, but all you know is the plantation.
Mm-hmm.
So in turn, your massa, the slave owner, would say, okay, well, you can stay on my property if you work day and night. So yeah, you can stay in this bunk and yeah, we'll feed you, but you still got to work.
Right.
And it was hard work, and it was for little to nothing. Again, sometimes it was for money, but most times it was literally just for a roof over your head and a hot meal.
Right.
Not to mention the people who had families mm-hmm. that were depending on them as well. So a lot of them were by force in a foreign land trying to survive. So a lot of them ended up staying on the plantation and working as indentured. Some of them ventured west.
Okay.
In 1963, the Emancipation Proclamation was signed.
1863,
sorry. And they were freed. And now along this time, the slaves were not being freed. The plantation owners, they got this information, but
they were like, doesn't apply to me.
It hurt their pockets to free their slaves, because they still had stuff to do. They still had there's a whole ecosystem that was built around slave labor. Absolutely. So of course they're not going to say, oh, this guy said they're free, so you can go get up and go. Some people did
did the honorable thing and did so, if you want to call it honorable. And some of them just kept them and did not free them. Mm-hmm. So the reinforcement of the Emancipation Proclamation took about 2 to 3 times. And then finally, news got back to Texas because the whole eastern side of the U.S. had abolished slavery. But nobody really sent the memo to Texas.
Okay.
And in 2 years later, on June 19th, 1865, Major General Gordon Granger ordered the final enforcement of the Emancipation Proclamation in Texas to end the Civil War and free the existing slaves that were left. So that is why we celebrate Juneteenth, because that is when the actual last time we were enslaved as a people.
I'll be honest, as a white person, I did not know that. I've heard about mm-hmm. Juneteenth as it's become mm-hmm. a national holiday. I'm still learning, mm-hmm. but I did not know that that was the final, and I didn't know that Texas was the mm-hmm. last card to fall, mm-hmm. essentially. Yes. Texas Hold'em. I mean, everything ties. Everything ties in.
So it's just it's a very rich history. And again, these people were enslaved. So basically it was free labor for 2 years. And nobody...
They get back pay?
They didn't even... Please.
All right.
I'll send my address to whoever needs it. Because I think I'll hold something.
All right.
Anyways.
Absolutely.
So it was the people that were... The whole rest of the United States, if you can visualize it, was free and was moving about as free. And the little letter in the mail that got lost in post, mm-hmm. Finally made it to Texas 2 years later, and they were finally freed. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, at that time, you say, okay, you're free, so what do you do to make a living?
Right.
And now you're in the wild, wild west.
Right.
So you're even further from where you started.
Mm-hmm.
So again, this is where, like I said, you either stayed on the plantation and worked for room and board, or you went out and you found other jobs, which was in most times working as a cowboy. So for the now working cowboys, mm-hmm. Which was also prominent because they were cheaper.
Right. Which is they were cheaper. To this day. Yep.
The indentured servants, which were white at the time, which was the poor white people that were still trying to make it too. But if you got somebody that will take pennies, why would you give somebody a dollar?
Right.
So it was prominent to take advantage of this eagerness to make money by the newly freed slaves. So they were cheap labor.
Right. And we still see that today. Yes. In people of color and mm-hmm. marginalized communities. Yes. Working for a cheaper rate because they're trying to make ends meet, and mm-hmm. white people exploiting that. Mm-hmm. So,
mm-hmm. So at this time again, so not only were they cheap labor, but they were actually skilled labor. Again, like I said at the beginning, black people were the most skilled. Mm-hmm. Again, based off of working on the plantations with these cattle, they had more hands-on care. They knew how to tame them. They knew how to brand them. They knew how to rope them. They knew how to herd and tend to them. They knew how to mate them. They did that. All the dirty work, the things that the other people did not want to do, is what was left for the African-American at this time, people that were working, the black cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
So at this time, the average cowboy earned approximately $1 a day. Plus food.
And this was, you said we're at 1865 yes. now? Okay, 1865. Mm-hmm. Just trying to keep everybody on yes. track with where we're at.
So at this point, you're either getting paid $1 a day or you're getting paid in room and board. So that was for everybody across the board, including. So this is POC, the black, the brown. When I say black and brown, I say African. I say indigenous. And I say Spaniard and or Mexican. And then we also had the indentured slaves, which were not indentured slaves, indentured servants,
okay.
which were the people that were of European descent that were just working and trying to make it.
So lower to...
Lower income.
Okay, okay. Lower income, class people, mm-hmm. poor white
that
people.
That was going to do the dirty work.
Okay, okay.
Again, the people that are just trying to make it are still being exploited, no matter what color you are. But for cheap labor, the United States will use you up until they cannot.
Mm-hmm.
They averaged $1 a day,
okay,
like I said, or room and board. Again, the black cowboys worked as ropers, wranglers, trail cooks, bronco busters, and they also drove covered wagons.
Bronco buster. Okay.
Which is basically, we'll get to that.
Okay, that's all right. Stick a pin in it.
Yes. They also drove covered wagons, which was basically to assist with transporting supplies. They fought the indigenous people because, again, we were going into their land. Yes, it was uncharted land, but people were already there.
Mm-hmm.
So they were sent out to fight them. They would get raided. I mean, that's just part of exploration. So, again, you send the black cowboys out there to do the dirty work. And they did a lot of those things, as well as also they were used to for entertainment purposes. They were fiddlers, singers. They also got some jobs working as lawmen. There was a different, the black cowboy was a stepping stone, but there were many other things that we were able to do because we are a multifaceted race anyways.
Mm-hmm. I'm making a loose comparison here. And I know that this movie is not a true story, but it has elements that from history. With the movie Django Unchained, mm-hmm, and how he was working alongside a black bounty, mm-hmm, hunter. Mm-hmm. Is that something that is in relation to being a black cowboy, being a rancher? Yes. Does that correlate?
Those are real life situations.
Okay. I
wouldn't say that Django's a true story, but right, those circumstances are very much factual and realistic to this situation.
Okay.
Amongst all the jobs that they had, so working as ropers, taming the cows, herding, maintaining the farm and the ranch.
And you said entertaining, singing, yes, jesting, dancing.
Everything.
Okay. On the road, on the trail.
And also, while on the trail, they were expected to sing and dance. So after a long day of travel, herding cattle, roping, whatever your job description was, you were expected to, at the end of the day, whip out your ukulele and entertain. And they did. But also, I feel like it wasn't, I don't want to say it was a requirement, but I know a lot of people, to relax and to let down, you go to what relaxes you and what, mm-hmm, makes you happy. And for my people at that time, it was through music, mm-hmm, song, expression.
Almost like singing around the campfire.
Yes, that is your expression, mm-hmm, and it was our expression was used as entertainment,
right,
for other people.
Right.
So we've definitely come a long way, but you were definitely required to do a little singing and dancing to make your way.
Okay.
So once the cattle drive era ended.
Once everybody got there.
And once everybody got there, did a little exploring.
Established.
Eradicated all the people that they did not want there, the undesirables.
That's a whole other episode for another day.
Then we developed railroads. Railroads became more prominent and became a more prominent mode of transportation to the West. And then barbed wire was invented. So once you have barbed wire, you don't need as many ranchers because what their sole purpose was is to keep the cattle in one location, keep the horse in one location, or escort them to said place. But once you have barbed wires and fencing, mm-hmm, you no longer need them anymore.
And I'm assuming it was people of color, black people, yes, that installed all those miles, yes, and miles and acres, mm-hmm, of fences.
As well as worked on the railroad. We've all heard the story of John, yes, Henry.
Yes.
So once all of that, the railroad was completed and the barbed wire was, mm-hmm, invented, and the Native Americans were relegated to their proper areas that the U.S. government decided they wanted them to be at, and then they could discover the other parts of the land, there was no need for as many cowboys. So that job field kind of died down. It was still, there still was a need for them, mm-hmm, but it was not as prominent. So, mm-hmm, again, I'm telling you, they were having they were transporting 3,000 cattle, and that was taking 30 cowboys mm-hmm. to transport them. And as many ranchers that there is, that it's just a high demand job. There was a lot of people that was needed.
Right.
But once everybody got to where they were and were settled, they were no longer needed, and right. they were just thrown to the side.
So it's like, now what? Now how do we use these skills in our next, because like black people, you always find a way out of mm-hmm. no way. Mm-hmm. So what was next after that?
So after the cowboy skills were no longer in high demand, that's where we go into the rodeos.
Mm.
These were also during these
rodeos or the herds, the herding out west.
So while they were out herding, like I said before,
migration.
No. During while they were doing the cattle herding, they would entertain. They also would have events where they also had events, competitive events that would showcase the cowboy skills, such as roping and riding.
Okay.
Rodeos became a popular form of entertainment, especially in the West. It's basically where people get around and they show off their skills with the livestock. This is horseback riding and things of that nature.
So I never knew that rodeos were... they originated in showcasing skill. I thought, because all I know about rodeos is what I see now, is that it's just almost like the county fair, mm-hmm. you know, just yes. hanging out, whatever, you know, showing off. I didn't realize it was rooted in black cowboys yes. and how they honed their skills and then mm-hmm. made entertainment yes. out of it.
Correct.
Okay.
The rodeos were used to showcase the skills needed by the cowboys and vaqueros to herd cattle. So, rodeos are not new. They were new to the United States. Again, this was a developing nation.
Mm-hmm.
So initially rodeos were from Spain, and Mexico. And of course, when Spain had owned a portion of the United States and Mexico was a little bit further up than what is on the map, what is drawn out on the map, this was other people's land before the United States came and acquired it.
Mm-hmm. Colonized it. We can say it. Colonized it.
There were Spanish and Mexican people here. So their culture was still here. Mm-hmm. And from their culture, the rodeo culture was picked up.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, when you think of the Spaniards mm-hmm. and the bullfighting mm-hmm. and the red cape and the mm-hmm. like.
Yes.
I never would have made that correlation. Yes.
So that's how it all got there, how we all got started there.
Okay, now rodeos today, there's essentially like prizes, grand prizes. Mm-hmm. Back then, were there? And if so, were black people allowed to win those prizes?
In the beginning stages, when it was just kind of, they were keeping it loosey-goosey, mm-hmm. no, it was literally for entertainment value. So once somebody found out I can make some money off of having people come and watch you play in the dirt with these cows and pigs lamb, they started putting up price on it. And people were paying to go to the rodeo mm-hmm. because, again, this was entertainment. You can make money off of this. It wasn't until later that, yes, there was a prize.
Okay.
What I looked up, I've seen prizes up to $200 if you win a certain event.
And back then, $200.
That was big money. That was
big money. I mean, honestly.
So imagine the things that you would do for $200.
Right.
When you're getting a dollar a day.
Right.
That's... You mean you want me to jump off of this horse and jump onto a cattle's head and wrestle him into the ground? Sign me up.
Okay. Okay.
So the prizes were used to entice the people to come.
Okay.
Or participate in these dangerous and physically demanding activities.
Yeah, absolutely.
And of course people came because we want some money. What's a broken arm?
Right.
If that's going to pay the rent for the month.
Mm-hmm. I mean, essentially, like you said, if you're making a dollar a day, $200 is 200 days worth of labor
mm-hmm.
that you get for one night at the rodeo. Mm-hmm. That's life-changing.
It was definitely beneficial. So some of the events
what are those?
These rodeos was barrel racing, bull riding,
okay,
saddle bronc, we talked about that, which is basically where the rider attempts to stay on a bucking horse, for a set amount of time.
Okay.
Saddle bronc.
So instead of a bull, they're on a horse, mm-hmm. and the horse is trying to buck them off, just like the bull does. Yes.
It's okay. mostly a wild horse, untamed horse. Mm. And the untamed and the wild horse is the hardest horse to ride. They will buck you. They will stomp you. They will throw you off. That is their goal. What are you doing on my back? Get off me.
Right.
So imagine if you're just eating dinner and somebody jumps on your back, what are you going to do to get them off?
Yeah.
This is what we're, that's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
They also had steer wrestling and bulldogging. They also had roping.
What is bulldogging?
Bulldogging is a term that is basically a horse mounted rider. You're on your horse.
Okay.
And you're chasing a steer. Is a steer a cow?
It's a baby cow?
Don't quote me. But it chases a steer, and then you jump off, basically what I just described, you jump off of your horse onto this steer.
Oh, okay.
The steer
I'm
is
with
like
you.
The longhorns, like the Texas longhorns. Yes. So they got these big horns.
Yep.
So me and my horse are going, I'm going to jump off, land on your horns, and wrestle you into the ground.
Oh.
For $200.
For $200. Okay. Okay.
So.
And that... then, so barrel racing, they race around the mm-hmm. barrels. Bull riding on a bull. Mm-hmm. Bulldogging mm-hmm. on a horse. Mm-hmm. And then you said saddle bronc is mm-hmm. when they jump from the horse to the steer.
Saddle bronc is just riding it when it's bucking.
Sorry. This is a lot of events.
I'm telling you, it's...
this is a lot of events.
It was a lot of different events.
Oh, steer wrestling. I'm sorry.
They keep you busy. So,
absolutely.
I mean, I'm sure I'd be entertained too. They also had bareback riding.
Okay.
Bareback riding was basically, like I explained, the wild mm-hmm. horses. So bareback was a horse that had not been trained to have a saddle. I know you know a little
ain't
bit
been
about
broke.
Horses.
Yeah. Shout out to Molly. Shout out to Sasha.
So you would basically a wild horse, unbroken, and you would get on it and ride it and hold on for dear life. It's kind of, I would say, kind of saddle bronc adjacent.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I am not a rodeo gal.
Right.
So please correct me if
we
I'm
did
wrong.
What research we could.
Please be gentle with me. Please,
yes.
please be gentle. And hog tying, which is probably one of my favorite things to watch.
I didn't know that.
Yes. So we talked about bulldogging. So the originator of bulldogging was by a black cowboy by the name of Bill Pickett.
Mm.
He was a cattle rancher, a cowboy. He worked on a ranch and he raised the cattle. And once he worked with the cattle, in the midst of the expansion of the West, we were still having the American Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And you were required to serve in the Army, whether you were going to be Union or Confederate. So even if you were on the West Coast, you were still going to be called to fight in this war. So while the owners, the white owners, were called away at war, the cowboys and the people that were left behind were left to tend to the land, tend to the animals.
Okay.
And in this process, Bill Pickett learned some techniques of how to get these animals to cooperate or how to do certain things more effectively, because maybe they were doing something the long way. And he said, let me figure out if we can do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this will work. So he was the original pioneer and the person that created the technique of bulldogging. So just imagine, I don't know what he was doing that day where he was riding a horse full speed and jumping on.
Yeah.
I do now that I say it. He was trying to keep the cow where they're supposed to be at.
Right.
So he had to jump off and
wrestle
him to the ground.
And they were probably like, Bill,
yes,
do it again.
And that is probably one of the most notable rodeo activities to this day, besides... The bull,
mm-hmm.
whatever.
That. Riding something that don't want to be rode. So essentially, not only is it a common misconception that rodeos are based in white culture, mm-hmm. you're saying that, well, history is saying mm-hmm. that not only were rodeos created by people of color, mm-hmm. one of the main contributors mm-hmm. was a black man,
yes.
Bill Pickett.
Yes.
The more you know.
The blueprint. The black print, if you will.
I like that a lot better.
So he has been credited for creating these techniques, which have gone far, far beyond. And his techniques have also spanned past rodeo and is used in everyday ranching.
Just in horsemanship,
well. Just in
ranching.
Horsemanship,
okay.
And how to work in ranching and all. the things that he's done to make things either simpler mm-hmm. or to help rear these animals has been used on the day-to-day all the way up to 2025.
An all-star, if you will.
Yes. And because of that, mm-hmm. in 1972, 40 years after Bill Pickett died, he became the first Black honoree in the National Rodeo Hall of Fame.
Wow.
So shout out to him. You were a groundbreaker, Mr. Bill Pickett, the OG cowboy.
Wow. Now, were there any other historical figures, yes. men of color, that were also big in the rodeo world?
Yes, we had Jesse Stahl. He was known for his saddle bronc riding skills, so okay. he could hold on. Whoa, Nelly!
Okay.
So he was very, very prominent for that. Mr. Charlie Sampson, he was the first Black bull rider, but this was in 1982, but he was still that guy. Shout out to you, Charlie Sampson.
To win a title in 1982? Okay.
Yes. So we were starting off in 18 something or another, and we finally got our first award for something in 1982.
Okay.
We also had Mr. Rufus Green. He was known as the godfather of Black rodeo. He was the first Black cowboy to join the PRCA, and the PRCA is the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association.
Oh, wow. What do we know what year that was? Roundabouts. That's okay. I'll see. If you're listening, maybe you should be watching because we're going to be posting this on YouTube. So for the people that are watching YouTube, we will be posting headshots of all the people that we're mentioning. We'll put some dates up there and I'll try to insert that date for Mr. Rufus Green, the mm-hmm. godfather of yes. Black rodeo.
So as always, we always pivot. Mm-hmm. Where we will start something and then other people will continue it on. Mm-hmm. So the image of the cowboy was very prominent at this time. Everybody, this was new uncharted land, and the people that had went and paved the way for us were known to be cowboys, and everybody had stories of the gunfights and all the land that they saw and all the horses and buffalo and all the things that they had saw and experienced. And these stories had made it back and had made it to Hollywood. And at this time, Hollywood started hearing those stories mm-hmm. and writing scripts.
Mm.
And the scripts that were based off the story that they heard from the West were a new genre of movies that hadn't quite hit the screens, and they were called Westerns.
Oh, okay. So we're pivoting now from the Black cowboy to rodeos to now Hollywood yes. entertainment.
And the portrayal of cowboys
okay.
In Hollywood.
Okay.
So Westerns
mm-hmm.
Is defined as films set in the American West that embody the spirit, the struggle, and the demise of the new frontier. I find that really funny where it says embodies the spirit and the struggle and the demise of the new frontier.
Mm-hmm.
And you completely exclude
the people that actually did that.
The people that actually did it, because it was very, very few and far between that you even saw a Black person in a Western movie.
Mm-hmm.
But
the early Westerns, the Black and white Westerns, highly doubt there's any people of color that weren't portrayed as mm-hmm. slaves, as correct. Native Americans. Absolutely.
Yes. The hero
cowboys and Indians
of the Westerns was always going to be the cowboy. And I don't know why.
Hold on, guys. We're checking our notes.
Notes.
Hold, please, while we do a little note reset. What's everybody doing today? Are you driving and listening to us? Are you sitting on the couch, eating a snack, watching us? Be sure to leave us some comments down below. Ask us some questions. If you have any questions about what we're talking about, we'll do our best to go over those. Or if you just want to ask questions and get to know us, that works too. You found where you needed?
No, but we're just going to keep on rolling.
We're just gonna going to keep
going. Speaking of Westerns and the stories that were being told, and you may say, well, where do they get these stories from? Again, we don't have text messages. We don't have email. We can't get on TikTok or Twitter and live stream it. Mm-hmm. A lot of these stories that were being told to these people in Hollywood was either by word of mouth
mm-hmm.
or it had been of some type of writings of somebody, diaries or something
okay.
that was being acquired on these trips.
Mm-hmm.
And one of these most notable people was Mr. Nat Love. Okay. He was an American cowboy and a writer. And he was active, an active cowboy during the Civil War times. And he wrote many, many stories about his experience in the Old West. And
so he was a writer, but he wrote.
Was a cowboy.
Okay.
He was a rodeo performer,
mm-hmm.
and a writer. He wrote as he was living life, he was writing these things down. He was documenting them.
Is that an autobiography?
He never
a memoir?
Put out works, but he wrote, and these excerpts
okay.
have been picked up along the way.
I see.
So
stolen. Yeah. I'll say it. Stolen.
So he, again, like I said, he was a cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
So he experienced these cow drives that they went on. Mm-hmm. And he also was a rodeo performer. He claimed to have won a roping contest, a throw, tie, bridle, saddle, and bronco riding contest. Like, according to him, he was that guy.
Okay.
So, hey, I'm scared of him.
All right. We love self-love. Amp yourself up. I'm all the things.
And in his writings, he also wrote that he was captured by a band of Indians while he was rounding up cattle. And he was captured by Indians. And while he was captured by the Indians, they got to know him and love and appreciate him. And also, he fell in love with the chief's daughter and was almost going to marry her. And then he left. Found a pony and rode away. Rode away into the sunset.
Honey.
So I feel like those are kind of familiar plot lines when it comes to Westerns.
Right.
As you're captured by Indians, you befriend them, or you fight your way out, or you fall in love with the beautiful chief's daughter, mm-hmm. and you wiggle your way out, and everything lives happy, and you ride into the sunset happily ever after.
Mm. Sounds like a country Western.
Nat Love. Also, I apologize. He did have an autobiography.
Okay.
And it was titled Life and Adventures of Nat Love. Better known as the cattle country in the cattle country as Deadwood Dick. Let me get it all together because I was fumbling. The title of the book is Life and Adventures of Nat Love, better known in the cattle country as Deadwood Dick. Nat Love's nickname was Deadwood Dick. That was one of his rodeo names. So
Deadwood Dick.
Shout out to you, Dick.
I'd like to know the story of how he got that nickname. But I mean, well, sorry.
Another notable person in the rodeo industry, or really just in the Western industry, was Bose Eckerd. He was famous for his cattle drives. He was the pioneer of cattle drives during the Civil War, all the way to 1869.
Okay.
So the stories of Bose Eckerd has been used. I don't know if you all read the book, and I haven't, but there it was a novel called Lonesome Dove, and aspects of his life were inspired by Mr. Bose Eckerd. There's a character in Lonesome Dove named Joshua Dietz, and that is based off of Mr. Bose. Lonesome Dove was wrote in 1985, and in 1989, there was a TV series that was put out and widely streamed on CBS. And so there was a miniseries, and the stars of that show was Tommy Lee Jones and Robert Duvall, two white men portraying the life's works or the stories told of a black man, Mr. Bose Eckerd. So that right there lets you know, just flat as day, this was a black man's story, but to make it palatable for Hollywood, you have two leading characters that were going to portray him.
So, excuse me, in that movie, was Bose ever given credit? Was he, or it wasn't until years and years later?
It wasn't until years later.
Oh, okay.
Once his stories and people that were able, again, we didn't have this instant communication.
Mm-hmm.
So once the other people started sending letters and telling their own stories about Mr. Bose, is when the link was formed, like, oh, this is actually his story. And again, the characters from Lonesome Dove or the were Augustus McCrae, played by Robert Duvall, and Woodrow Call, which was played by Tommy Lee Jones. Mm. And they put out three different TV sequels after that called Streets of Laredo and Dead Man's Walk and Comanche Moon.
And this was, was as early as the 1990s that they were still putting out films, putting out TV shows, and having the main characters be white, and the stories were really about people of color, about black men.
Yes. Another notable person for me in the Western culture was Bass Reeves. I think Bass Reeves might be, maybe I heard that name, but Mr. Bass Reeves was probably one of the best U.S. Marshals in the world, in the country, in the nation. He was the first deputy U.S. Marshal west of the Mississippi River. He was a gunfighter. He was a farmer. He was a scout. He was a tracker. And he was a railroad agent. And he spoke many of the Native American languages, which made him very powerful when it came to being in the West and working in the West. You have to be able to speak the language of the people that you are encountering. So he was able to speak Cherokee, Choctaw, Chickasaw, Seminole, and Creek. Those were all different Native American languages that he could speak and he used while doing his work as he crossed the West. The region was saturated with horse thieves, cattle rustlers, gunslingers, bandits, bootleggers, swindlers, and murders. And that did not scare Bass Reeves at all. He made up to over 4,000 arrests in his lifetime, killing 20 men in the line of duty. And his career spanned over three decades.
4,000 arrests.
4,000 arrests.
Wow.
In over 30 years with 20 fatalities along the way. Wow. So, and people will say, this was the original Lone Ranger. A lot of the stories of Bass Reeves were used when it was time to depict the Lone Ranger.
Okay.
And they wanted to do something based off of, because the things that Bass Reeves did was so extraordinary and big, you had to write about it. And Hollywood felt that the audience would want to watch something like that. I mean, that's high entertainment value, but you do not want to have a black man on your screen. Mm-hmm. So they just used his story and put a white face on it. So the original Lone Ranger, you will remember he had a white guy with a black mask. They say that was to signify the correlation with Bass Reeves. He has a black mask on because he was a black man.
So that was supposed to be their little tip of the hat, their homage to was a black mask. May I ask?
I wouldn't say homage, but.
May I ask, does that tie in or is that similar to blackface?
It does.
Okay.
But I feel like this was in this factor. Mm-hmm. I feel like it was just solely to a kind of a nod to Bass Reeves. But also, Bass Reeves was known to use disguises other distractions to catch criminals.
Okay.
So this disguise was the mask.
Okay.
And it was black.
Gotcha.
So I don't know what we just finished a pandemic. So yes, wearing a mask can definitely, I never knew who anybody was. Like, put your mask down. Who are you?
Right.
So I can see that. Yeah. But Bass Reeves definitely, he was known for his disguises.
Okay.
He was known to be a stellar horse rider. Mm-hmm. And he was known to have great relationships with his Native American partners. Also, another thing was Bass Reeves was known for leaving silver dollars, handing out silver dollars as souvenirs, and the Lone Ranger used a silver bullet as a calling card.
Okay.
So those are all kind of nods and tie-ins to the greatest Mr. Bass Reeves.
Okay.
There's also a show on Paramount Plus that talks about him. not talks about him, but there is a series on Paramount Plus called Bass Reeves Lawmen. Give it a watch.
You said Paramount Plus?
Paramount Plus.
Okay.
It's really, really good, and I believe that it's loosely based. I'm not going to say that it is completely historically accurate as a documentary. It is a TV series called Bass Reeves.
Gotcha.
I feel like also we've talked about all these men that were have been prominent to Western culture. I also want to hit on Miss Joanna July. She was an indigenous woman, or she was both. She was multiracial. She was she was a Black Seminole, which was a Black person or a Black woman, and or and she was mixed with Black and Seminole Indian.
Okay.
So she, the Seminole people were mostly from Florida, and they migrated to Oklahoma. Once the Florida started being invaded, they migrated away from that and were relocated to Oklahoma. They were mostly blood descendants of the Seminole people, free Africans, and escaped former slaves. So she was a top-notch horse tamer. She participated in a lot of horse breaking, which was a hard skill, which is basically horse breaking is bringing a horse under saddle. And is the in the process of training a horse to be ridden. Again, you have wild horses. They are not used to this. So they have to be trained. And it takes a lot of time, patience, and skill. Mm-hmm. And she was one of the best. So much so as the best that she was hired to train horses for the U.S. Army. So she was that girl. So shout out to you, Miss Joanna July, also known as Miss Joanna Phillips.
Okay. She get married or?
She did get married. Okay. But
all right. Gotcha.
Who needs them?
So it's not only men, like you said, that have deep-rooted history in ranching, cowboys, country music, country life, country living. It's women as well.
It is. But of course, as usual, women are overlooked and the men get the spotlight. So
even more so.
Just to tie this all in, Hollywood liked the term cowboy better than the term cowhand. It basically, the erasure of Black cowboy culture is literally because Hollywood preferred cowboy over cowhand.
So when it suited them,
yes,
cowboy was no longer racially discriminant. It was, well, now we want to use that
it
word.
It was no longer an insult to be called a cowboy. It was cool now. Now it's cool. You can call me that.
Right. Which is like so much of the words we use today and racially fueled meanness. Just meanness.
Very sure. So the legacy of Black cowboys is very, very rich and deep rooted. And I'm just skimming. This is very, very light. I know
we could deep dive
on and on and on, but this is very light work. And they did wonderful work and groundbreaking work. And I want to let you all know that Black cowboys faced a lot of discrimination and a lot of boundaries, and they overcame great odds. And they have been able to evolve into leaders in the field and become landowners, rodeo cowboys, singers, and actors.
Awesome. That is awesome. So tying that back in with what we started the show with, which was the Grammys recap and Beyonce winning for Cowboy Carter, I am going to pose the question that all the white people seem to have the discourse about on social media right now. Does Beyonce belong in country music?
I am going to say yes.
Okay.
She belongs in country music because there's, first of all, nobody can tell you where you belong. You make your own way. But in country music, I feel originally the cowboy and the country music originated with Black people and Black culture. And Beyonce did her version. This is her version of country music. So the people that it resonates with is for the people that it resonates with. And the people that don't get it, you don't have to get it. Beyonce's country album, Cowboy Carter, was directed to the people that it was supposed to, and the people that get it, and the people that don't, don't.
Absolutely.
I wrote, because I felt like this was, I really ate this one up though. I said, for me, what Beyonce did was country music, her version. It's not the universal white version, but it's hers. And it's authentic to the Black experience, mm-hmm. the Black cowboys, the Black people that live in the country, and the Black people that are country. The type of music that resonates with us as a community. And that's what country music is, and that's what Beyonce put out.
Absolutely.
I think also what was really heavy, what really makes me feel the Cowboy Carter album was the use of the banjo.
Okay.
And I think the banjo has a real, because when you think of country music, you think of that, the banjo. That's the first thing you think about when you think of country.
Sorry if that was loud.
Country music. So the banjo is originally a West African instrument.
Yep.
So the most notable instrument used in country music originated in Africa.
White people, this is what I mean when I say sometimes you just have to listen and sometimes you just have to learn, because my white ass never knew that. Yeah. A banjo, you think of a old hillbilly redneck.
Up in Appalachia
with no teeth, spitting tobacco.
Yes.
Playing an African instrument.
Yes. The irony. It originated in West Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Again, when they were invading Africa and stealing people and culture, they encountered these instruments and brought them over and replicated them. They learned how to play them. The African people that were skilled enough to know how to make banjos, we personally know someone that can make banjos.
Oh, the tie-in.
We might need to holler at you. I asked you before, how did we get into this? But now I really need to know about the inner workings.
She doesn't even know how she got. We have a friend, shout out to you, Anna, that made banjos for a while. It's just the connectivity of everything.
We love you, Anna. But anyways, so the instrument was already observed mm-hmm. while there. And then it was brought over as a trophy. And also the people that knew how to make them when wanting to make their own music, they made these instruments and played. So basically the banjo... Just until about the 1840s, it was considered to be a black instrument. Nobody really used banjos unless they were a black person. So that was a black instrument.
Mm.
So in the 19th century, the interest in the instrument was spread across the United States and the UK because they were having traveling shows. These traveling shows were called minstrel shows.
Okay.
And they were going from city to city to city. And in these minstrel shows, they would play a banjo, and people saw those and was like, ooh, I want those. And people saw the high demand for them. So they started replicating them and selling them and mass produced them and was selling them mail order sales. And they put out how-to books on how to play this banjo, this black instrument. People saw the popularity of it and utilized it and replicated it.
So once again, white people taking something that is not theirs,
a common thing.
And trying to pretend like it is theirs.
Yes.
There is a very strong recurring theme here.
Yes. So,
white people,
these minstrel, shows, basically a minstrel show is a show that was performed by mostly white actors, and they were wearing blackface.
Mm.
And so they were wearing blackface makeup for the purpose of comically portraying racial stereotypes of African Americans. There were a couple African American performers, and they had black only minstrel shows, but the shows were used specifically to stereotype blacks as dim-witted, lazy, buffoonish, cowardly, superstitious, and happy-go-lucky. Each show consisted of comic skits, variety acts, dancing, and musical performances that depicted people specifically of African descent. So we have these traveling shows mm-hmm. that are used to make fun of Black people, mm-hmm. Africans. And in this show that they're using to make fun of Black people, because we're still entertainment value, we are not treated as humans. Mm-hmm. I would say yet, but I'm going to leave that one out. We're not being treated as humans. We're seen as humans. We were a character. Mm-hmm. So white people are dressing up in blackface to portray the stupid, dumb Black person. And while doing this, they're saying, "Ooh, we have this instrument that only the Blacks use, and we'll go up here and we'll strum our banjo just like them to make fun of them, because that's what Black people do. It's going to be spot on. They're going to love it." And they were popular, and people did love it. So,
wow.
Yes. So that's the minstrel shows popularized the banjo that was already existing.
They used Black culture mm-hmm. to make fun of mm-hmm. Black. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes. Oh, white people. Gosh.
So once the big boom of the banjo and the consumption of the banjo, mm-hmm. It was inexpensive or it could be homemade. A lot of the people in the rural populations were able to make them themselves, but it is a 5-string or a 4-string instrument. Mm-hmm. And it was, at that time, after the big boom, it became popular in parlor music, college music clubs, jazz bands. And most of the time, though, when you think of the banjo, you think of folk music, bluegrass, country music, mm-hmm. Rock music, you might. You more and more to this day, you hear the banjo more frequently used. But at the time, it was mostly folk. When you think of it, it's folk, bluegrass, and country music.
Okay.
And when I think of folk, bluegrass, and country music, I think very white. But the basis of it is very much Black. Mm. It's very much. So even the instrumentation that is predominant in this music
was created by Black people.
Yes.
Is originated in African yes. roots and culture and tradition. Mm-hmm. Wow. The more you know.
Yes.
The more you know. That is, I'm learning so much today, and I hope that everybody else listening is learning as well.
Teach, teacher.
Do you want to wrap it up here? Do you have anything else you want to cover? We're at about an hour. We can keep talking, baby.
We're out. We will save the rest for later. But for episode 3, mm-hmm. episode 3, or maybe we'll just finish up this month of February. Before the month of February is up, we will continue on this Black history episode mm-hmm. and give you more information on the Black cowboy. Like, I know we've gone far, far, far left. And that is my train of thought. Stick with me. Stay with me. But
I wish you all could have seen the note that we are trying to have episode syllabuses and guides. And I actually did a screen recording of your original note. I thought it was going to be like 5 bullet points. Mm-hmm. I'm literally like scrolling. And I said, look at my baby doing her homework and doing her brainstorming.
When I apply myself, I apply myself. And I feel like this is not a topic that should be skimmed up, mm-hmm. Skimmed over. It should be very well thought out and very thorough.
Yeah.
Because this is my opportunity as a Black woman to tell my rich history to the world. And it doesn't matter if there is one viewer on here or a million viewers or 40, 50, however many viewers, this is my time to amplify the greatness of my people and the richness of our history and the things that we can do and that can be done. We are the originators. We are the groundbreakers. And no matter how many times people try to erase that or tell you that the things that we have done and have paved the way for and laid the groundwork for, we have. And through not only just me, but the people that are willing to share that, a lot of people are getting educated and knowing that at the root of it all, we are the Black Prince.
So thank you so much for sitting with me and listening to me ramble on and on. This is literally my stream of thought. I've told you all that I have undiagnosed ADD, as you can tell from the different plot points. And I'm still not finished. I'm still going.
We still have so much to cover.
I have more to say.
The time is of the essence. We will wrap
this up. So today we have covered the origins of the word cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about some of from prominent and or original cowboys, some prominent rodeo people. They started off as rodeo performers, but then we also have some top-notch rodeo rodeo athletes that are doing big things to this day. And also the impact that these cowboys had on the turn of the century were probably one of the most famous film genres, westerns. There is more to come. I have plenty more to say. Thank you. And stay tuned. I have a lot to say about this.
Yes.
It might not be the next episode, but we will finish this up.
Yes.
This Black History
Because month. Like I said, it's not just going to be in the month of February.
Yes.
I feel like Correct. It's my duty as a white woman Yes. with so many beautiful people of color, melanated people, Black people, whatever you want to call yourself, surrounding me.
Mm-hmm.
It's my duty to help amplify Yes. your stories and help share your stories and ask questions,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're never going to learn if you don't open your ears and if you Yes. don't listen.
Yes.
Because I promise you, it sounds good.
Yes.
See my little, sorry, I tried to do a little tie in there, but thank you guys for watching. Come back for episode 3 and we love you.
Thank you. Bye.